This is the Retirement Lifestyle Advocates Radio program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. Glad you're listening in today. Joining me in segments two and three of today's program is economist Mr. Harry Dent. Harry is a multiple-time best-selling author, and he has a terrific way to predict where the economy and financial markets may go based on demographic research. I'm going to get his forecast for the economy and stocks and bonds in segments two and three of today's program. It is April, which means I have a brand new special report for you. The report for April is titled Fundamentals of Estate Planning and Probate Avoidance Strategies. The report is courtesy of Gary Lofsgaard at Integrated Estate Planning Systems. If you'd like to get a copy of this report absolutely free, all you need to do is visit requestyourreport.com. The report, again, is available by visiting the site requestyourreport.com. So what about stocks? It seems like stocks are continuing to rise. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is approaching 40,000. The Standard & Poor's 500 is pushing 5,300. And if you use the Dow as an example from the stock market low of October of 2023, stocks are up about 24%. If you look at the S&P 500 from that same October date, stocks have rallied about 27%. Now, those are rapid rises on a percentage basis in literally 5 months. And an investor would be smart to ask the question, what's driving these large percentage gains over a time frame of less than 6 months? Well, in a perfect world, you would have earnings or increasing earnings driving the stock market higher. Now, according to FactSet data, companies in the S&P 500 saw earnings grow 4.3% during the fourth quarter of 2023 from the prior year. Now, that sounds like pretty good earnings growth, but let's break it down just a little bit more, shall we? The current PE ratio or price earnings ratio of the Standard & Poor's 500 is 28.52. Now, if you're not familiar with the term PE ratio, as I said, it's price earnings ratio. And to state it very simply, the PE ratio tells what you pay for a share of stock in dollars and what you get back in earnings in dollars. So presently, a PE ratio averaging 28.52 means you spend $28.52 for a share of stock that pays you back $1 in earnings. Now, that's about a 3.5% return on investment. Now that you're armed with that information, let me ask you a question. Would you rather put your money in stocks and get a 3.5% return on average, or would you prefer to own a fixed interest investment that pays you more than 5% and has zero stock market risk? When you look at stocks from that perspective, you have to conclude that they may be overvalued. Now, if you go back in time about 3 years and you know that interest on a fixed interest investment was less than 1%, now a return in stocks of 2.5% or 3% is an improvement. That is no longer the case. But let's not stop there. Let's look at another stock valuation tool. If you are a longtime listener to RLA Radio, you are undoubtedly familiar with the Buffett Indicator. Now, as you might imagine, the Buffett Indicator is named for the famous investor Warren Buffett, who commented in an interview that it was his favorite stock valuation tool. Now, the Buffett Indicator takes the total value of stocks, otherwise known as market capitalization, and divides by economic output or gross domestic product. So the Buffett Indicator is a fraction with market capitalization or the total values, total stock market value on the top or the numerator of the fraction, and gross domestic product or economic output as the denominator of the fraction. Now, if you go back and take a look at the historical valuations of the Buffett Indicator, you found that at the market peak at the end of 2021, total value of stocks or market capitalization was about 216% of economic output. We are now at about 166%. That is the second highest level ever. You can go back to 1950, and during the 1950s, stocks were about 33% of the economy. In the mid-1960s, when the stock market peaked, before the bear market of the 1970s, total market capitalization was about 87% of the economy. At the tech stock bubble peak, when stocks were wildly overvalued, we were at 163%. And today, 166%. This should be a huge red flag for stock investors, given what I talked about recently on a radio program. And I asked the question, is it growth or is it cash flow? Now, if you happen to miss that program, let me just explain to you a bit about what I was talking about. In the fourth quarter of 2023, the U.S. economy grew by $334 billion. On the surface, that is an extremely good number. Now, when you dig into that number and look at how the economy actually grew, it becomes very evident that this rather respectable growth number isn't really growth at all. See, federal government spending is a component in gross domestic product. And even though the economy grew by $334 billion in the fourth quarter of 2023, that growth can be completely attributed to government spending. Government debt in the fourth quarter of 2023 increased by $834 billion, and the economy grew by $334 billion. That means the government borrowed $2.50 for every $1 of economic growth in the U.S. economy. Now, why do I bring this up? Well, the bottom line is this. And if you're a stock investor and have money in stocks, you may want to think about this. Without big deficit spending by the government, the Buffett indicator is even more overvalued than its already overvalued level. In other words, the economic output that comprises the denominator of the Buffett indicator fraction would be far lower without the government spending money that it didn't have. So what does this mean? Well, in my view, at this point in time, it means that stocks are extremely overvalued. Now, let me be clear. That does not mean a stock market crash is imminent. The artificially high stock prices could continue for at least a little while. Now, they don't have to. Now, there is historical evidence that the Fed has pumped up the stock market. Now, I know that making a statement like that on the radio makes me sound like a conspiracy nut, but hear me out. After he left his post as president of the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank, Richard Fisher, in an interview with CNBC, made a very candid admission. He said, and I'm quoting, "What the Fed did, and I was a part of it, was front-load an enormous market rally in order to create a wealth effect," end quote. So here we have a prominent former member of the Fed openly stating that the Fed juiced the stock market to make people feel wealthier. We would be naive to think that couldn't happen again, wouldn't we? Now, John Hussman, a respected hedge fund manager, recently commented on stock valuations. Hussman suggested that stocks could be in the most extreme bubble ever. Hussman compared current stock valuations with those of 1929 and 2021, noting that there's strong potential for a significant correction looming. The Federal Reserve is now putting rate cuts on the table for later this year, and the stock market is reacting as one might expect it to. It's reacting positively. Hussmann is forecasting a 63% decline in the S&P 500, which would bring the index back to levels not seen since 2013. So when it comes to stocks, I'd suggest either active management or maybe avoiding them altogether and see how this shakes out. And if you're retired or approaching retirement, I have another bit of advice for you before we go to the break. Don't get caught up in comparing the performance of your portfolio to the performance of a benchmark like the S&P 500. While performance comparisons to an unmanaged benchmark are the norm, this is bad practice for those that aspire to retirement. If the benchmark loses 20% and you lose 18%, you've outperformed the benchmark, but you've still lost a lot of money. Now, I'll be back after these words with Mr. Harry Dent and get his forecast. Before I go to break, let me remind you that the April special report is titled Fundamentals of Estate Planning and Probate Avoidance Strategies. All you need to do to get your copy of that report is visit requestyourreport.com. I'll be back after these words.
Welcome back to RLA Radio. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. Joining me once again on today's program is returning guest, Mr. Harry Dent. Harry is a best-selling author many times over, an economist known for his demographic research and uncanny ability to forecast what's going to happen in the financial markets. You can check out his free daily newsletter at harrydent.com. And Harry, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, nice to be back, Dennis.
So, Harry, the big headline, and I don't know who did the math, but the U.S. government is adding $1 trillion in debt every 100 days. That's obviously an unsustainable trajectory. In your view, how does that affect the economy, and what does the end game look like?
Well, you know, Dennis, I mean, here's the real story, and I had to add it all up because nobody wants to talk about it. Since 2008, when we went into a downturn that I predicted 20-some years before it happened, simply the peak of the baby boom, broader spending wave, a slowdown in the economy that was going to last for 12 to 13 years with the baby bust, where we are now recently, they've been printing money ever since. $27 trillion, Dennis. And when you add up the consistent deficits, there hasn't been one surplus, nothing but growing deficits. And of course, the biggest 2 years were right after COVID. And the money printing, which was $8 trillion alone. So 19 in deficit trillion, $8 trillion in money printing, the biggest stimulus program ever over 14 years, okay? That's what they've been doing. So another trillion. What is that? This, first of all, this is ridiculous. What they did, basically, and I think we're going to pay for this over many years to come, they covered over what would have been Great Depression II from 2008 to 2022. Okay, that was the slowdown. And, of course, we came into that with the highest debt ratios in history. And usually, during such a downturn, we'd clear out all those bad debts like we did in the 30s and other major downturns in history and be meaner and leaner to come into the millennial boom, which, by the way, starts right now. It starts in 2024. Their spending wave turns us back up. The problem is we're coming into this with massive debts and overhangs, which have not been resolved. So I think we're still going to see that hit. And why are we going to see it hit? The government fined by overreacting to COVID, way overstimulated for a short-term crisis that was going to go away on its own. They had to then way over tighten into last year. That tightening is going to continue to hit harder into early next year and continue to be tight long after that until they actually start to cut rates again, which they're only talking about June at the earliest. So I think that this is going to hit now, and we're going to have to see a downturn for the next year or two to deal with this debt. We should have done it a long time ago. We should have been over this. To think you can just let the economy boom and never have a recession is like saying, oh, well, why do we go to sleep? We can just stay awake and get more work done and play more. No, recessions – And booms are about the same ratio of sleep and waking, and it's necessary. You can't skip sleep. Recessions clear out our economy, create new innovations. All the innovations happen in the downturns, all the cost cutting and great stuff. And basically, governments are pretending they're smarter than the economy. And that, oh my gosh, that means you don't really believe in free markets, do you? And they don't. They are basically going against the thing that's made us rich since the late 1700s, democracy and free markets, which the United States created democracy, has led the move to free market. And here we are basically saying, nope, we don't trust the markets anymore. We can't have recessions. They're bad. So we're gonna fight recessions. And I think this is the stupidest policies in history. And I think we're going to pay the price in the next year or two when we should be booming again.
So, Harry, when you look at just the levels of debt that exist, federal government debt, call it $35 trillion, Social Security, Medicare underfunding, I think there was a report I saw over $100 trillion, private sector debts at record levels. Can we possibly deal with this in a short period of time? And you'd mentioned Great Depression, too. I mean, isn't that still coming? Haven't we just kicked the can down the road, in your view?
Yeah. Exactly. That's what I think. We kicked the can down the road about 3 years because of this. We should have seen Great Depression too, between late 2019 and early 2023. Okay. So we saw the first part of it 2008-09, but the stimulus put that off. So yes, I think we're going to have to deal with that now, because that's exactly what downturns, recessions, and depressions are a sign. Depressions follow major financial asset bubbles like the Roaring Twenties, in what we saw into 2000, the tech bubble one, and now 2021 tech bubble two. That's when you get a depression instead of a recession, because it takes a deeper downturn to restructure all those bad debts. And that's a good thing. It's like a company, instead of going into Chapter 7, which was, by the way, a U.S. invention in the world economy long term, instead of a company just going out of business and creditors losing 80 to 100%, you end up going where maybe the creditors get 50% and the company keeps going and everybody's happier. That's what recessions do if they're loud. But I think we're going to go into something worse now because they put it off. That's what I think. So I'm telling people, yes, the demographics finally point up again, but I think we're going to have to see this crisis. And again, what's going to trigger it is that 525 basis point rate hike last year, which everybody said, oh, see, the economy's handling that fine. No, you have to lag that a year and a half. And that means we won't know how hard it hits until early next year, almost a year from now. And I'm saying that means the economy goes down. And you know what? If the economy keeps getting worse, guess who? Biden has almost no chance of getting reelected. And he's already, the poll I saw this morning said Trump 47, Biden 44 already. Imagine if the economy keeps getting worse because of this tightening, which it should. So everybody's expecting a soft landing here. And I'm like, okay, my question is, have we ever seen a soft landing? The bigger the bubble, the bigger the burst. If you want a soft landing, don't have an over indebted crazy bubble in the first place. And of course, we didn't do that. So there's no soft landing for this, period.
I'm chatting today with Mr. Harry Dent, multiple time best-selling author and economist. You can get his free newsletter at harrydent.com. Harry, I read a statistic and I thought about an interview that I did with you several years ago. And that was that I think government deficit spending in the fourth quarter of the year was like $834 billion. And the economy grew by $334 billion. Doesn't that mean if the government was operating with a balanced budget, we're already in a recession?
Exactly. What they have literally, and again, the biggest tool, people see the money printing, but the biggest tool is these deficits. Again, so $19 trillion in deficits over the last 14 years have basically turned what would have been a persistent ongoing recession, which means depression. When you have that long a recession off and on, it turns into depression like the 1930s, that whole decade. So that is what we would have seen. So the question is, Well, did they do something genius and avoid a Great Depression, which to me is questionable in the first place, because people don't appreciate the hard, good work that depressions and recessions do, number one. But regardless of that, did they avoid this, or is now it just going to hit us harder later? And I'm saying, if there is a God, if there is a God of consequences, let's call it, then we are going to pay for this. You don't just push this sort of thing, all these debts. You don't keep increasing debts and money printing when you get over in debt. You restructure debt. That's the way you get out of a debt bubble and a financial asset bubble, which are never sustainable. Stocks, Dennis, and I've measured this all throughout free market history, okay? Stocks are 2 to 3 times higher than they should be relative to the growth of the economy and every other, you know, GDP and all these other major measures. We are way overvalued, and that means young investors, these poor millennials, not only going to inherit less of a boom since we stole from it and passing all this debt, they're not going to be able to invest for retirement because stocks are so overvalued that John Hussman, who's got the best neutral model, regardless of economic ups and downs, he just says with valuations today, an investor is going to lose 3% a year for the next 12 to 15 years in stocks and equities. How does anybody plan for retirement in a losing stock market created by this excess stimulation? So this is taking the future today. It's like, you know, again, taking another drink to keep the hangover from hitting. That's exactly what it's like. So I think this is the worst policies in history. And most economists are just saying, oh, they're doing the right thing. And yes, we avoided a recession and that's good for everybody. No, everybody needs a kick in the ass now and then. And recessions are good. Anybody thinks recessions are bad and evil do not understand how free market capitalism actually works. It's not just about the freedom to innovate. It's about the freedom to take out the losers. Eliminating the losers after expansion is just as important as creating new winners, which free market capitalism does well. You have to do both. This is a crime.
Harry, I've got about a minute left in this segment. Tell the listeners about your free newsletter they can pick up at harrydent.com.
Yeah. Basically, I have a paid newsletter like everybody in my profession, but look, get to know us. I mean, you're going to get an article from me every week, okay, for free. And these, every article's got a chart. I mean, so this is a lot of good information. So you can keep up with, you hear me on something like your show here. Okay, you think maybe it's interesting. Well, let's see. Okay, you can keep up with what I'm thinking, how this is progressing. And then if you want more information, you can get on a paid newsletter. But this is free, and it's not a compromised newsletter. This is good current stuff. All you do is go to harrydent.com and put in your email and phone number, and you're done. That's all you have to do.
All right. Well, I'd encourage listeners to do that. And the good news is I'm going to continue my conversation with best-selling author and economist Harry Dent when RLA Radio returns. Stay with us. I'm Dennis Teubergen. You are listening to RLA Radio. I have the pleasure of chatting today again with returning guest, Mr. Harry Dent. Harry is a best-selling author many times over. He is an economist known for his demographic research. And you can check out his newsletter at harrydent.com. That's a free weekly newsletter. So Harry, there has been a term tossed around describing current asset prices, and that term is everything bubble. Would you agree with that term?
Absolutely. And you know what? I mean, I've studied every bubble in history in the last 20 years since we entered this bubble economy in the 1990s for the first time since the Roaring Twenties. And this is, I mean, the Roaring Twenties was not a real estate bubble. Why? You couldn't, mortgage lending was very tight, 50% down 5-year terms. Okay. So you're not going to get a big real estate bubble out of that. And we didn't. So when stocks crashed 89%, the worst in history, real estate only went down 26%. That is less than we saw in the 2008-09 downturn, 34% on average in the United States. So yes, this is a real estate, and this is real estate bubble number two. And this time, but the first time, the stock bubble came first, the tech bubble in the 2000 crashed. You know what that did? All the speculation went, oh, well, real estate's the next place to bubble up. And then real estate bubble went into 2006 and then crashed in 2012. This time, both bubbles have come more together, and both are going to crash together. The stock market's going to lead it as usual, but real estate and stocks are both going to go down. Both are going to be bigger crashes than last time. I'm seeing 50% for real estate this time versus 34% last time. Last time was 58% for stocks, and this time it's going to be 80, maybe 90%. This is not something, here's my point, Dennis. Most of the time I agree with financial advisors, sit through corrections, rebalance your portfolio. They're too hard to time anyway. Well, this one is much bigger, and it clearly looks like it's getting ready to tank this year to me and next year. So this is a time to make some real decisions, and the safest way to play this, and it's a good investment anyway, the best bonds in the world, 10 and 30 year treasury bonds, they will pay you 4.2 to 4.4% right now, and which is a good yield considering it's risk field, but these are the only bonds that will appreciate, and very substantially. They could as much as double in the next year or two in this crisis. They went up 50% in the 2008-09 crisis. They're going to go up double more this time, I see, because they are the safe haven. Money will flow into these safest bonds, and if you have corporate bonds, you want to be in the A or triple A, but the treasuries are still better. All risk assets, like you said, everything bubble, the only thing that will go up is the safest long-term bond. So that's where you want to be. And I'm not telling people to get in these 4, 5, or maybe even, you know, 5, 6% corporate bonds long-term. I'm telling you to get into them just for the crisis. And then when stocks and real estate come back down to very affordable prices again, which is what's good about a crash, then you can get back in for the millennial boom from 2025 into 2037. And benefit from higher yields in a time where we're not going to have to be worry about big stock crashes and recessions because we basically deleverage them here. So all I'm saying is I can't change this. You can't change this. We put off this deleveraging. It's very likely to hit anyway harder in the next couple of years. All you got to do is get out of the way and be in a good, safe investment anyway. Long-term treasury bonds or something that should be a part of your portfolio anyway.
So, Harry, as it relates to long-term treasuries, as the Fed has been increasing interest rates over the past couple of years, those holding long-term treasuries, I'm thinking of the exchange-traded fund TLT just as a benchmark, have lost a fair amount as interest rates have gone up. Do you think that that down cycle for treasuries is over then?
No, yeah, I do. Because they're raising short-term rates. They don't affect the long-term bond. What the short-term rates do is slow the economy, and then the bonds that are looking out 10 and 30 years, like the treasuries and the 20-year corporate, they see when they start seeing the slowing instead of the rising inflation, and inflation's already come down from 9% to 3, okay? So this should be obvious. As they see the slowing, the long-term rates they see going down, and that's what causes the 10 and 30 year treasury bonds to appreciate. And I'm telling you, people would never think, and it's never happened in history. Like I said earlier, that the 10 year treasury went up 45% in 2008 when the economy got bad. Okay. This time it would project, I'm projecting it's going to go from 94 recently to 186 plus the value of TLT, which is an average 20-year treasury bond, average 10 and 30. That's a doubling. And that would happen just during the crisis in the next, say, year and a half or two. That has never happened in history. That will never happen again. We will not see a crisis this extreme because of all the stimulus putting it off. So this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to make bigger gains than you could ever make at the stock market in the safest bonds on earth, 10 and 30 year treasury bond. This is a one-time offer, folks, and it's not going to last long.
Well, I'm chatting today with Mr. Harry Dent. You can check out his free newsletter at harrydent.com. I'd encourage you to do that. Harry, you mentioned real estate, 50% decline. That is a devastating forecast.
Yes. You used the right word there, Dent.
Do you see, with all the commercial real estate loans that are maturing, it'll have to be refinanced at higher interest rates, do you see commercial real estate leading the way down? And to what extent do you think residential real estate will be affected or maybe even lead the way? How do you see this playing out?
Yeah, no question. Commercial real estate does go down first. and when it will spread to residential because it's as overvalued or more, and it's the high-end real estate. I mean, most of my audiences come to me after the speech and say, well, Harry, yeah, I hear what you're saying about real estate going down as much as 50%, but I have this special house on the cliff in Laguna Beach, and it's so beautiful. You know that's not going to go down, right, Harry? I'm like, no, you're the one. That house is going to go down the most. The bigger the bubble, the bigger the burst. The best real estate, of course, is going to go up in the bubble. Bubbles are driven more by the wealthy than the everyday person anyway, especially because they're the ones buying all the financial assets. And so that's what goes down the most. So you really have to look at your real estate. Anybody who's got a vacation home that they're not going to keep forever and use a lot, sell that for sure. I personally would consider selling my main home and buying something like it back in a couple of years. But that's different. If you're, and especially if you've already downsized from maybe a 5-bedroom home to 3-bedroom to retire in and without your kids and stuff, okay. And especially if you're in Ohio and not in San Francisco or New York or Miami or somewhere bubbly, okay. But look at your real estate. Take this seriously. And here's the measure I tell Dennis, because real estate's so different. Look at what your house or your office building, whatever you're looking at, what was it worth in the middle of 2012? And that's not that long ago, okay? That was the last low in real estate. That's where I'm projecting prices will go. That's going to be 50% for the average house. Most people think, oh, that's probably 20%. So that's the reality. And if you're comfortable with that number, then fine. If you're not, you better sell quick, because I think by the end of this year, we're going to be in this recession, even though economists are saying, oh, no recession now. Well, they were saying a year ago, recession almost for sure. So their leading indicators aren't working well, and they don't know what's going on. So don't listen to them, okay? This thing is likely to hit by the end of this year when nobody suspects it. So it'll be too late to get a good price for any real estate you're selling, especially commercial. Commercial will lead, and high-end will go down the most and fastest.
Well, Harry, I use the word devastating to describe the potential real estate crash here, and I'm not sure what word to use to describe a forecast for stocks to decline 80 to 90%. Are there any sectors of the stock market that you see maybe bucking this trend moving ahead?
Well, you know, you always get the staple sectors, the General Mills type everyday product. I mean, yes, but you got to remember, when stocks go up, it's the valuations that go up, you know, more than anything. When the economy looks good and investors are positive and things have gone up long enough, that we get overvalued across the board. Of course, the high tech and high growth stocks are going to have the highest valuations and the highest price to earnings ratio. But the entire price earnings ratio of the whole stock market's gone up from 10 to 12 in lower times up to 18 to 20 now. And they may be 30 to 40 and 50 in bigger stocks. So they all go down, and they all go down substantially. I'd say an everyday good solid staple stock will just go down 50% instead of 80 to 90. Well, I don't want to lose 50%. That's too much to lose as well. So it's just better to get out, be in these safe bonds. What you're doing here, Dennis, you're making a simple trade-off, and it's at a good time. Things have gone up and are so high valuations, okay, that it's less risky to do this. You give up your gains for the next year and a half, I hope the stock market goes up another 10 or 20%. To avoid a potential 50 to 90% loss. That's a good trade-off. All you're doing is giving this up. In fact, I think you only have to give it up till the end of this year to see if I'm right. Because if I'm right, it'll be more obvious, and it will get worse also. So if I'm right, then you stay out. But you only have to be out to this, say, maybe around the end of this year to see if this is going to happen. And then if it doesn't, okay, then you can consider getting back in. But this, I'm just telling you, but if you look at long-term history, the odds are greatly favoring down for stocks and not up. Nothing can go up forever, and valuations only get so high without coming down. And it happens every time. And when valuations are high, there's always all this rationale. Well, it's different this time, and the Fed won't let it happen, and blah, blah, blah. The Fed's already created this bubble. This bubble's 100% artificial. We would have been in a downturn, and stocks would have been down over the last 10 to 15 years if it hadn't been for this $27 trillion. So there's no way the Fed's going to stop this from bubble when they created it. This is artificial. There's nothing to hold it up, okay? And so once it cracks, it's going to crack hard. And you, again, all you have to do is get out of the way and reinvest when it's crashed.
Harry, last question, real quick one. The Fed, I think, will try to reflate a bubble. Do you think there's any chance they could do it? And do you think I'm right?
Yeah, of course they will. I mean, they, all they do, and they keep upping the ante. Okay, well, you know, if last time it took, you know, 20, you know, 10 trillion in combined stimulus in 2 years, what are they going to propose, 20 trillion this time? And do my view is by time they're already talking about cutting in June, but only then, okay? By time we hit June, stock could be down another 20%, and then that's gaining momentum, and investors are getting scared now. And we're back at the COVID lows and da da da, and then it's harder to turn around the sentiment, and then people start to get skeptical. I mean, because I mean, the truth is, every time they've stimulated, it's taken more stimulus, and the stock market's gone higher. But every time the stock market's gone lower, and we've had a recession to follow, every single time. How long does even the stupidest person on earth take to get that you don't get something for nothing? And simply printing trillions of dollars out of thin air is no solution to anything. It's just taking another drink.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. My guest today has been best-selling author and economist Harry Dent. You can get his free newsletter at harrydent.com. Harry, always a pleasure to catch up with you. I get terrific feedback when you're on the program. Love to have you back down the road. Thank you for joining us.
Okay. Thanks, Dennis.
We will be back after these words.
I'm Dennis Tubergen. You're listening to RLA Radio. And thanks again to my special guest today, Mr. Harry Dent, for joining me on today's program. If you've not yet requested my April special report titled Fundamentals of Estate Planning and Probate Avoidance Strategies, I would invite you to do so. All you need to do is visit the website requestyourreport.com. Let me know where to mail the report. I'll send you that along with some bonus information. The report is free and there is no further obligation. So go to requestyourreport.com to get the April special report titled Fundamentals of Estate Planning and Probate Avoidance Strategies. In this segment, I want to chat with you a bit about the predictable outcomes of easy money. I know on the surface, when I say predictable outcomes of easy money, that might sound a bit arrogant, but hear me out. There was an Austrian economist by the name of Ludwig von Mises who understood this very, very well, in my view. Mr. von Mises said this, quote, "There is no means of avoiding the financial collapse brought about by credit expansion. The alternative is only whether the crisis should come sooner as a result of voluntary abandonment of further credit expansion or later as a final and total catastrophe of the currency system involved." Now, there is a website dedicated to Austrian economics, and on that website, a gentleman by the name of George Riesman published an article that really helped clarify this statement made by von Mises, because when I read that statement, you may be a bit confused. So Riesman says this. He says that capital in the form of credit is normally extended out of previously accumulated savings. So people save money, they put it in the bank, they buy a CD. The banker loans out some of that money and reserves some of that money. That's normal. That's proper, according to Riesman. Now, contrast that with credit expansion, which is the creation of new and additional money out of thin air, which money is then lent to business firms and individuals as though it were a supply of new and additional saved up capital funds. Its existence, according to Riesman, serves to reduce interest rates. In other words, you get artificially low interest rates. And it enables loans to be made and debts to be incurred, which otherwise would not be made or incurred. In other words, lenders get aggressive in lending, and there's easy money. There's low interest rates. There are 0% interest rates. And debt gets accumulated that would otherwise not get accumulated. Now, Reisman says this, always and everywhere, to the extent that private banks participate in the process of credit expansion, they do so with the sanction and generally with the active encouragement of the government. Economists, especially von Mises, who I quoted at the outset of this segment, have shown how credit expansion is responsible for the boom and bust business cycle. In the first segment of today's program, I talked about how this easy money environment, how these artificially low interest rates and all this easy money has created what I believe is a bubble in stocks and a bubble in real estate. And obviously, Harry Dent on today's program talked about that as well. Reisman says, nevertheless, public opinion believes the business cycle is an inherent feature of capitalism, and that the role of government is not that of causing the phenomenon, but combating it. That's actually not the case. Mises said this, quote, nothing harmed the cause of capitalism more than the almost regular return of feverish booms and then the dramatic breakdown of bull markets followed by lingering slumps. Public opinion has become convinced that such happenings are inevitable in the unhampered market economy. Now, the truth is that credit expansion is responsible not only for the boom and bust cycle, but also for another major negative phenomenon that the majority of public opinion likely blames on capitalism, and that is sharply increased economic inequality or the wealth gap. Now, the wealth gap is expanding. I don't know if you saw this, but the number one performing luxury asset class over the last 10 years was luxury whiskey. In November of 2023, a bottle of Macallan Valerio Adami 60-year-old whiskey sold for $2.7 million. There are not middle-class people buying a $2.5 million bottle of whiskey. That is evidence that the wealth gap exists because of this easy money. Now, how much longer can this credit expansion keep the bubble inflated? Well, as I talked about in the first segment, we're seeing signs that deflation may be about ready to hit stocks, maybe about ready to hit real estate. And we're seeing inflation continue in consumer items. So I'm looking for a stagflationary outcome here. So to answer the question that I just posed, we do not know how much longer the credit expansion can keep the bubble inflated or even if it can reflate the bubble. But we do know at some point the bubble will have to burst. In the words of the late economist Herbert Stein, if something cannot go on forever, it will stop, and that will be the case this time as well. Be sure you're ready. Be informed. Get this month's special report as well as some bonus information. Go to requestyourreport.com. The website, again, is requestyourreport.com. I'll put a free box of information in the mail to you. Just let us know where to mail it. Again, that's requestyourreport.com. That's all the time I have for this week. Glad you tuned in. Talk to you again next week.